Kim, thank you for that excellent job. And I just want to emphasize, as I get going, one point. This is a session on the National Climate Assessment. These scientific assessments are part of the requirement of the Global Change Research Act of 1990. The federal government's supposed to do this every 4 years, kind of like it's supposed to do air standards every 4 years, 5 years. We've had two assessments in the 20-year history of the GCRP, and both of them have produced really great documents and reports. And for those of you who haven't seen the 2009 Climate Change Impacts Report from the second assessment, it's in my left hand. And this is a fabulous document. It's a very approachable, researchable document, and it's something you can hold in your hand. What I want to emphasize is that the GCRP, the Federal Climate Change Scientific Apparatus, is really trying to move beyond reports that you hold in your hand. And so as we talk about the National Climate Assessment, I want to emphasize this duality. We are producing a report in 2013. But I'll say that this report is just a small piece of what we are trying to do. It's going to be a communications tool. It's going to be a snapshot in time. But we're also working to develop an ongoing, sustained assessment process. The indicators are part of that. There will be interim documents and reports that we're talking about now. So as we hear these presentations today, I just want everybody in the audience to be thinking about what the sustained assessment would look like and to have that in mind and maybe give us some feedback on that. The second thing is a shameless plug. For those of you interested in other things that are going on outside of the National Climate Assessment, our interagency working group is having a listening session tomorrow at 6:30. For those of you who don't go anywhere unless it's in the APHA program book, it's under the other business meetings under the really unfortunate acronym of UCAR-JOS-USGCRP. Which means, I can tell you what it means, but you won't recognize it if you see it. But 6:30 tomorrow at the Yerba Buena Ballroom Salon 13, we're going to be presenting some other updates, including what was up there before, a metadata access tool for climate and health, the MATCH data portal that we are trying to roll out. And that's something that I really would like to invite you to come to, give us some feedback on. I will disclose that I have no financial relationships, but this is a little bit of a lie because I want to acknowledge help from Paul Schramm of CDC in my presentation today, and I didn't make a separate slide. So there is a relationship to disclose there. Paul Schramm, who was really critical in the two workshops that I'm going to be talking about, assisted in the development of these slides. So we're transitioning in the climate change world from one in which we're talking about 2050 and we're doing models and we're thinking about projections to a world in which we're really recognizing the reality of climate change, that it is happening, it is having impacts on us right now, and it's not something of the future. And this is something that's been a transition at the IPCC. It's a transition of the USGCRP. As we make that transition, what we know is that climate change is happening. What is happening in climate change is happening at a local level. It's not happening on a global scale. It's happening in places. And so the only way that we can capture what is happening, both in terms of climate impacts and in terms of people responding to those climate impacts, is to get down to the regional level. It's not always easy to do that at the federal level, but what I'm going to be presenting is some of the efforts, some of the ways we're approaching it, that we're scratching the surface in the effort to do this, and just how important that is. And so as part of the process of developing the information for the National Climate Assessment, our interagency group wanted to get out into the regions and have these workshops. And I want to emphasize again that these workshops have dual purposes, very important dual purposes. Part of it is content. Part of it is trying to take a snapshot in time of what is happening. And that means both what's happening in terms of impacts and what's happening in terms of adaptation and data and scientific activities to try to address those. The second part of this, and equally important, is the process part of this, which is the convening power of the federal government to bring people together who otherwise would not be able to come together at a regional level of local people. So bringing together the local, the city, the state health department people from a region to have a conversation, to share practices, to develop a sense of community at the regional level that would not be able to happen otherwise. So very important to have this idea of process and content. So with that in mind, we only had the resources to do two regions. We did one in the southeast region in Charleston, South Carolina, February 13th, 14th, and the northwest region in Seattle about 10 days later. And these were the questions we were asking. Again, I apologize. There's a lot of information on the slides. I did that so you can go back later and read it in detail. I'm going to try to just highlight some things on a lot of these slides. But the important thing here is we were trying to capture what is happening. What are the impacts you're seeing? What are your concerns? What are you doing? And collect an inventory of activities that are going on as well. And then also we were asking what are people's needs? What are their information and data needs? So to summarize the Southeast very quickly, this is just an idea of a list of the regional projects. You can try to read this as you go along. But in each of these regions, we found that there was really a robust set of activities going on. Dozens to over 100 activities were identified in both of these regions. Some of these were federally sponsored, and I've listed some of these. There are a bunch of federal regional activities that are developing climate change activities that have a health component. Some of them are just local local health departments or local universities and their projects. But what we were able to do in these workshops is pull it all together, let everybody know what else was going on in other places, and be able to catalog these kinds of projects. In the Southeast, we asked about, we brought to the workshop what were the climate projections for the Southeast. Obviously, there's heat issues in the Southeast. There are air pollution issues with ozone. One of the things that emerged from the workshop was a lot of concerns about water, both harmful algal blooms, but also issues of drought and just water supply and all the political issues of water in the Southeast as well. Also, sea level rise issues for the Gulf Coast and for the coast of the Carolinas as well. When we asked people what were they seeing, and again, the point of this was not so much to get into technical scientific attribution of impacts to climate change. We can talk about that for another hour. The point was to get people's sense of what they were seeing and what was going on. Again, a lot of people talked about water quality issues, about lowering water tables and having to dig deeper into bedrock, which brought up contamination from radon and uranium. A lot of issues with algal growth in reservoirs requiring increased water treatment. A lot of people in the Southeast and also in the Northwest raised the issue of behavioral impacts, which is something we talk about. We haven't really been able to collect great data on, but this was an identified area. And also a lot of concern about infectious diseases in the Southeast. Southeast region included Puerto Rico, where they're having dengue epidemics, and this was raised as an observed climate-sensitive condition that was a current problem. We asked people about key vulnerabilities, and I've kind of lumped the vulnerabilities. When we asked people about vulnerabilities, a lot of people said, well, we don't have enough funding in public health. That is one definition of a vulnerability. I would call that maybe a barrier to effective adaptation and a reason why this is, a reason for vulnerability as opposed to vulnerability itself. But the issues that the kind of issues they raised were both those kinds of capacity and barriers to adaptation, as well as vulnerability due to problems of poverty throughout the South, problems of existing rates of high rates of chronic disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, asthma, and a lot of issues related to the vulnerability of agriculture, both from an economic standpoint and also from the health of the workers. These were some of the list of data needs. I'm going to move quickly and just go through this. It's a lot of different climate data and climate scenarios. In the Southeast, there was, and in the Northwest, and wherever we go, we just don't have enough monitoring and surveillance data. We hear this again and again, whether we're talking about infectious diseases and vectors, whether we're talking about waterborne diseases and the monitoring of coastal areas, whether we're just talking about the problem in the United States of collecting basic emergency room data. All of the people who are on the ground working on this identified a lack of data across the board, really. It was very hard to get prioritization. Okay, let me move on and talk about the Northwest. Again, there were a large number of regional projects in the Northwest. Of course, one of the reasons we went to these areas was we were aware of some of these projects. Our agencies were already funding. The CDC was doing climate-ready states and cities in the Northwest. The NOAA was doing work on oceans and human health, as well as some of their regional integrated science and assessment centers. That's that RISA acronym at the bottom. And both throughout the Northwest, there was a lot of activity going on at both the state and the county or city level, Multnomah County, King County, and Seattle, very, very active on these issues. But one of the things that had never happened in the Northwest was people from Idaho had never sat down with people from Seattle and Oregon and talked about these issues. In fact, the people from Idaho don't get out of Idaho a whole lot. They don't have a lot of money to travel and go to these. And so that's where the process of these workshops was really very important and needs to be followed up. In terms of climate in the Northwest, they have issues with heat. The eastern part on the other side of the coastal range has a lot of temperature variability. They get really high temperatures. They get really cold temperatures. The feeling was that it's actually on the west side where it's usually cold and rainy, and they've seen some weird weather in Seattle of multiple days above 95, which they're not used to, that's actually the setting perhaps of greater heat vulnerability because you have a population and an infrastructure that isn't used to it. So in terms of observed impacts, there are also a lot of concern about harmful algal blooms here in terms of both the reservoirs and the coastal areas. Of course, the heat that I mentioned, and also a lot of infectious disease concerns in the Northwest with coastal Vibrio populations increasing and changing in their subspecies. People also mentioned the Cryptococcus gattii outbreak in the Northwest, which is a brain fungal infection that's emerged from people kayaking around coastal areas. There's been work on this. There isn't an absolute clear climate change attribution to this, but this is the sort of emerging infectious disease that people are concerned about in relationship to ecosystem disruption, et cetera. In terms of key vulnerabilities in the Southwest, Southeast rather, there's a lot of dependence economically on land-based agriculture as well as fishing. But in the Northwest, they really identified shellfish and their fishing industries as being very vital economically and for people's welfare, and the concern about both food contamination but also economic impacts. Northwest as well as Southeast raised this issue of degraded public health capacity. This is a really busy slide, and I apologize for it, but this is the kind of inventory that we were hoping to. This is the content part. This is what we were trying to pull from these workshops. This was the result of our breakout groups where we asked people, what data are you already collecting? What data would you like to have? And if you look at that wish list, it's kind of a comprehensive wish list. People really want to have data on the heat. They want to have data on air conditioning. They want to have data on vectors. They want to have data on basic emergency room visits. So in summary, what we saw when we brought people together who are on the ground, who are working at the local and state level, is that they identified all kinds of different health impacts that they were dealing with now that they felt were associated with it, if not with the climate change that has already occurred, at least with the kind of impacts that will be more sensitive and exacerbated by climate change in the future. We saw a lot of similarities in regional vulnerabilities, especially on the issue of capacity, data acquisition, and funding and support, as well as, and I didn't have time to go into the details on the vulnerable populations, but both areas identified communities of poverty, environmental justice communities, and farm workers as populations of concern. But then there are some differences that you only get to when you get to the regional level. Southeast was a little bit more concerned about drought issues, about water quality, although that was somewhat shared. Northwest a little bit more about wildfire impacts, and the types of pathogens in both areas were also slightly different. But one of the things that was really clear from both of these workshops was that this process of bringing people together, of giving opportunities for collaboration, of using the federal convening power to help the locals who are stressed and stretched be able to find some commonalities was very important. Having said that, we have so much more to do in that front, I can't even start to talk about it, but that was a very clear theme that came from these workshops, was that there was value to the process and that we need to do more of this. So with that, I'm going to close, and I just want to give you this is the URL. It's one way to get to it. You see that JOS, UCAR, acronym there again. But we have a very complete summary of these two workshops. These two workshops reports are available at this UCAR site. If you were to just Google National Climate Assessment Regional Workshops, should get you to the right page too. So thank you very much, and I'll look forward to the panel discussion.